Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Allegedly with me, Matthew Cole Weiss. And again, Theo is out of town. So again, we have our special guest co-host, Mr. Josh Peck here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bless all of you.
We really appreciate when you come in and sometimes contribute.
I think it's time to abandon Theo.
Oh, I'm good for it.
And let's just make the leap together.
Okay.
This feels like right.
Well, you already have your own podcast, correct?
I do. It's called Curious.
I know, I asked that last week, but go ahead.
I'm working on the title. These things happen. But yes, it's available all places where you get podcasts.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And coming up, special guest Matthew Cole Weiss.
Yeah.
It'll be kind of like
you
this.
You really aren't pushing the boat out for guests, are you?
I know, right? No, it's like the podcasting world's so weird because it's like, you do mine, I'll do yours. You know, like, it's like when you go to someone's birthday party or someone comes to your birthday party, then you feel obligated to go to theirs, you know?
Yes.
That's how I feel sort of way. So then I'm like, ugh, I guess I'll do Josh's podcast.
Really?
Just kidding.
We had
it was
a great
fun.
Time.
So today's special guest. All right. I don't want to say it incorrectly.
Ramesh.
Not that part. Sorry.
Go on. I think you could have had a good start and then you hesitated.
Ragnathan. Ragnathan.
It's Ranganathan, but I actually like Ragnathan. It does. I actually don't mind it.
It's a marathon.
It sounds like sort of some sort of ancient god or something.
Yeah.
Like beware the wrath of Ragnathan.
the newest Marvel character.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. Oh wow. Well,
yeah, thank you, man. That's good.
Absolutely. You know, and Mr. Ragnathan from the new Showtime show, Just Another Immigrant, which is fantastic.
Thanks.
And awesome because it's different.
You know,
than what's out there for sure. And I actually looked it up because the premise is basically you and your family, and it's kind of, I wasn't sure what was real and what wasn't real.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because it's that hybrid of kind of, I mean, some of it's scripted, right? Or
there's no script.
There's no scripting. But some of it's I don't know. Describe it to me, please.
Well, we, basically the idea behind the show is that this is what actually happened. I moved my family over here and then I booked the Greek Theatre. That's the long and the short of it. And basically had 3 months to try and...
You booked it yourself?
Yes. Yeah. And then I just spent the following 3 months trying to get myself as close to selling it or get my profile to a point where I could sell that gig out because obviously nobody knows me here.
Sure.
I'm a massive deal in the UK, huge deal.
If you don't say so
yourself. I would never have anyone go, is it Ragnathan in the UK? let me get that out.
Way to go, man.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I was trying to be polite.
Yeah, no. So anyway, that's the basic thing. But and it was me sort of bringing my family over here and then we just sort of, documented it basically.
Okay.
But there's no script as such. I mean, the truth is that sometimes, for example, my mom will hide her truth. My mom's very polite and wants to. Ben Green is in the room, who's the director of the show, and he's worked with my mum and myself before. And the thing that we have is that my mum has got very strong feelings, but also is very eager to please. So sometimes we might go into something, and we just have to make sure that she says what she really thinks rather than is too polite. Do you know what I mean? Because her tendency would be, okay, darling, that's fine. But actually she's pissed off about something.
Do you do that? You trick her into it?
No, you just go do what you really think. And then she does it. But do you know what I mean?
So, yeah, of course.
Yeah, be yourself.
If my mom was on camera, she would be a completely different person than
exactly.
the one I know.
So we've said, I say to my mom, look, we know you're a bitch, so be a bitch. That's the idea.
It's like that video that went viral of the mom talking to a Jehovah's Witness.
No,
and
I don't know
she's like, she's being quite lovely. She's like, thank you so much for these pamphlets. I'll be sure to explore it. And then they leave and she starts beating the shit out of her son. She's like, don't ever let a Jehovah's Witness in this house again. And it's kind of, but I feel like every mom is that way to a certain extent.
Well,
a little bit, right?
Yes,
I think so, yeah.
By the way, I forgot to explain one part of it. This is also competitive podcast where Josh and I compete to win the episode. You get to award points at will.
Okay.
Well, and then at the end you will have to pick a winner based on whatever the hell you want.
Based on whatever I want.
Whatever you want. You can award points for a question, a comment, deduct points, whatever.
Do you want me to tell you as I'm going what I'm awarding points for?
Okay, so we're ahead of the game.
So first of all, I'm going to do is I'm going to give Matt 3 points straight off the bat. I'll tell you why.
Yes, please.
Well, because you did mispronounce my name, but I did respect the way that you went, like you just went for it. Do you know what I mean? Like, because you look pretty racist then. but the fact that you are willing to just put yourself out there and go for it, I think 3 points for that.
Okay, I'll take them.
Josh, I'm going to give you a point just because I just think you've got a nice manner about you.
So kind of you. Yeah, thank you. I feel the same about you.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. That won't get you another... I won't get another point.
And I don't have a point sheet.
No. Oh, right. Yeah, there you go.
Josh, why are you going under the table?
What can I say?
Please.
Listen.
I've said this before and I'm saying it again. My Lisa mattress is friggin' awesome. It has given me the best night's sleep that I've had in my whole life. And it has really revolutionized my sleeping habits, because sleep is a very important part of life. You know, sleep helps you make better decisions and improves your memory. You make fewer mistakes. It's not marketing, it's science. And to design a better mattress, Lisa leveraged 30 years of experience and hundreds of hours of testing to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sleeping styles. Yes, even my body shape. Their mission is to provide a better night's sleep for everybody. And through their 110 program, they donate one mattress for every 10 they sell. That's over 26,000 mattresses and counting. Lisa strives to leave the world better than they found it. But that doesn't just stop with mattress donations. Together with the Arbor Day Foundation, they plant one tree for every mattress they sell and are committed to planting 1 million trees by 2025. So this summer, you can get $130 off a Lisa mattress, and trust me, it's worth it. And this is only for our Allegedly fans. You'll get $130 off your Lisa mattress if you go to lisa.com/allegedly. Lisa, LEESA.com/allegedly, ALLEGEDLY. Trust me, it is going to change your sleep and change your life. The show is documenting that, and it's quite funny, and it's your wife and your kids,
yes,
who are adorable. They're
thanks
adorable
very much.
Kids.
Thank you.
And your wife, very pretty as well. Sorry.
No, you don't have to say that. She's okay. She's good for me. But she's okay generally.
I'm married as well.
Right.
I feel similarly about my wife. She's
okay.
It's a good balance.
Yes, exactly.
Right, yeah.
You don't want to feel like self-conscious every time you go out because you're punching above your weight so much. And that is what's great about my wife. I never feel out of my depth when I'm out with her. I sort of think, no, I look at her, even on her best day, and no, that's achievable. You know, right. Jimmy,
Do you think
I'm not.
About you?
I don't know, actually. I don't know if she sometimes looks at me and just sort of thinks, wow, how did I? But I never look at her and think that. And that's good. That's good.
Yeah, she hit the cosmic lottery.
So my question is, since it follows, were the people in your life hesitant to be like, especially like your family? My family would be like, I tried. Actually, I got a call to audition for a game show, The Wall, and they wanted a Jewish mother-son thing. And I was like, we'll do it. And my mom's like, hell no. And I was like, why not? You can win money. She's like, I don't want to be on TV. And I was like, who the fuck cares? You can win $12 million or whatever. And she's like, nope, I won't do it. So we didn't do it. So my question is, would they, not that if it was a guarantee, whatever.
Selfish.
So were they hesitant to...
I mean, your mom sounds really out of line. Man.
Oh, she's the worst.
But that is pretty selfish.
I mean, they throw the word bitch around a lot, but my mom, no, I love my mom. So how do you like...
I'm going to give you a point for just saying you loved your mom there.
Yeah,
this
I
is
do.
So sweet.
I do.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's genuine.
Yeah.
So your kids and stuff, like... Were you nervous? Were they hesitant? Like,
well, essentially,
did you want to put him on camera?
The kids, I mean, my eldest son is 8, so I think he's still at the age, and he's still at the age where I still consider him to be property.
Whatever you say.
Yeah, exactly. What's their choice? The truth is that my mom, I mean, my mom and my uncle, who are both...
Rags.
Rags, have been in stuff with me before, and... both mum and my uncle Rags are keen on being on television. I guess that's the best way to say it. Like, well, actually, they they consider me surplus to requirements is what I'm saying, I guess, is that they would happily do a show without me, I think. Not to get, I don't think that, I think I
annoy, good to know.
Yeah, the necessity for me to be in the show is something that they find tiresome. You know? I think they would happily do something on their own. No, they're very keen to, look, they're very keen, that's not true. My mom's very supportive and has enjoyed doing TV. So she's very up for it. My Uncle Rags is a frustrated rock, hip hop, porn star. Like he wants to be famous in some discipline. He just hasn't figured out the discipline yet.
Right. Get famous.
Yes, he was super keen, right? So that's not an issue. The person that was a real struggle was my wife.
Yeah, I
because
can
she not only does she not want to be on TV, she doesn't want to watch any TV that I've done. So she's not, I don't really watch anything I've ever done. So like,
really?
So yeah, so she really doesn't, not that she's not supportive. It's
what's
just
that about?
Well, I just think
she's healthy with like healthy boundaries.
Well, she sees me at home and she thinks, why would I actively seek
anymore?
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough.
I get you live 23 plus hours a day.
Exactly. Yeah. And so she was the one that it took some convincing, to be honest with you. But and then I lied to her about how much she would be in it. So I sort of intimated to her that she would only be in it. Initially, I said she would only be in it for like five minutes or whatever. And then I realised, obviously, if she's seeing the cameras there all the time, then she will assume that she'll be in it for more.
She's smart enough to recognize
that. And then she goes, okay, look, you've done this in a very underhanded manner, but I'll go along with it.
Right.
But now, like, with like, once the little short trailers started coming out and stuff, I think it hit home that she was. I also promised her it wouldn't be shown in the UK. So like her friends back home in the UK wouldn't see it, but now it is being shown. So but all of the promises and the stuff that I'd said to her in order to get her to agree to be in it, that's all gone. That is all gone.
So you lie to your wife.
I said, yes.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. That's
so
all right.
At this point, the only thing you can say to her is, don't you like money?
Yeah.
And is there any weird, because obviously you have a proper director, but like, is there ever a time where you're like, honey, maybe you want to try it this way? And she, like, because I've tried to give my wife a little bit of direction.
In life?
In what way?
Or like, if we were shooting, like, because, you know, I shoot like social media videos or something funny, and I'd be like, hey, maybe try it this way. And a look comes across her face of like, I believe she could murder me.
Right. Yeah. Like, I'm not taking this from you.
Violence.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. How is it? Do you ever have that moment or?
No, it hasn't. I've never, it didn't come up that I felt like I needed to tell her to do anything differently, really.
Smart.
She just sort of was herself and we sort of, that's how it went. But there was a time when, so basically there was a time when I actually sort of slightly became frightened because we went to do like a workout on the beach. It was like this military
boot camp workout.
Yeah.
Strong.
Yeah. And I basically have the sort of cardio fitness of an animal that's about to hibernate. So right. So I'm not really operating on a very high level, whereas Lisa, my wife, is like, goes to the gym all the time. Like, she's absolutely on it. And then we started doing the workout and I started to get irritated because she was better than me, because that's not, not okay. Do you know what I mean?
You're the king of the family.
Exactly.
You should be the best at everything.
Thank you.
Of course.
Yeah, three points for Josh. Yeah.
This whole dynamic with your wife is really screwing me up. You're lying, you think you should be ahead of her, and you think that she's just attractive enough?
No, she's very attractive for the league that we are operating in.
Sure, okay, that's fair enough.
So the truth of it is that, but then they started to feel like I wasn't taking it serious enough, because I did the typical thing of if you're not good at something, pretend you don't give a shit about it. You know, start to throw it away and like, you know, sort of be casual and I don't care, blah, blah, blah. So they spotted this and they've obviously seen like dicks like that before.
Right.
So they started saying, every time you fuck up, we're going to give your wife a punishment. Like, so they would ask me to do something, I wouldn't get it right. And then they'd get her to run along the beach with like a car tire around her waist and a gas mask on. And
terrible.
So, and the issue with that is that the big issue with that is one, it's sad to see your wife doing that as a direct result of your actions, but also it's very funny. You know, like, it's obviously is obviously on a surface level hilarious.
Right.
Like, how can seeing my wife run in a gas mask be any kind of deterrent? Do you know what I mean? So,
like, so that what was, more can we throw on her? Wow, okay.
So I had that kind of conflict of thinking, well, this is funny and entertaining.
Right.
But at the same time, I've got to look after my right. wife here. So there was that kind of fear. But
that actually, is a Sophie's choice there. Wow.
It's one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do.
She's still got the gas mask, right?
Yeah,
she's
yeah,
still
yeah, sitting yeah. there. I said, look, listen, keep hold of that.
Yeah, you'll thank me later.
So here's a question. How do you go from a comedian who's going to come over here, which I assume is hard to break into the U.S. of it all, you book the Greek for yourself, and now you have your own show on Showtime. How yeah. does that happen?
Well, the truth is that I don't know. You know, like Ben and I had sort of, I'd always planned to come over to America
right.
and give it a go.
And we, on this podcast, we've had a lot of, we had Catherine Ryan.
Oh, yes. Not yeah, too long yeah, yeah. Ago. Good friends with
we've
Catherine.
Had a, there was another one, I can't remember. And I hear, you know, it's obviously it's, you could be the biggest of the big over yeah. there and yeah. then come here. It's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. But just going forward, just so you know, all other British comedians are shit.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
I just sort of, I don't know if
I
anybody
knew
else
that is, walking in.
Yeah, yeah.
I was
yeah,
like, Ricky yeah, Gervais,
yeah.
who?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So good. I'm glad we got that cleared up.
Okay.
But yeah, the thing is that I'd always planned to come over here. And then Ben and I talked about this idea of documenting
right.
the journey or whatever mm-hmm. to trying to do that. And so I came over here with the show already, you know,
right.
already happening. So that obviously...
They could see it and yeah, they could see
it obviously
that it
colors
works.
Your outlook on things because yeah. trying to you know that this is going to be a show, do you know what I mean? Like but what we didn't want to do is the fact that we were making a show, we didn't want that to accelerate artificially
the process.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 exactly. So I was trying to get gigs and it wasn't like I was going, I'm doing a Showtime show, can you get me a gig? I was doing it like as if I would have done had I not been doing the show.
Right.
And it was difficult, you know, like because, you know, people haven't heard of me over here. And
right.
and your UK profile, it doesn't mean anything because people that know comedy have
right.
obviously heard of UK comedians, but it's not, you don't immediately track, you're not, you go down a lot, right? But I actually found it exciting, like, because when I did, like, when I got my first stage time, like, first proper gig, I was sort of like an open spot again, and, and I was going up, and it felt like, because one of the things that happens is, like, when you sort of, because I've got, when you get a certain bit of profile, like, I remember when I just after, like, a show that I'd done had come out on TV, I started getting better responses when I was doing gigs, and I started to become paranoid that was because they were like, oh, it's Ramesh off that show, and then I was getting like more, a bigger response than the stuff deserved, which
right.
obviously is enjoyable at the time because you think, I'm killing it, man,
right.
I'm so
yeah,
good
yeah.
but actually the truth is you think, I'm going to get shitter if this carries on because
yeah. right.
my material is not being judged on
there's always
merit.
Something when you're not
hacky.
Thinking you think it, you're it, something's going to happen the
yeah.
other shoe will drop
yeah
you know?
Yeah yeah yeah.
Right.
So coming over here and sort of starting from scratch, if you like, was a very it was a really lovely experience, sort of coming in, getting my in, trying the stuff out. Nobody knows who you are. There's no excitement or they've nobody.
Expectations.
No
too.
Expectation. Yeah. yeah. And I found it was a really lovely to sort of start from that level again. Do you know what I mean?
That's cool. Have you performed here?
Yes. Yeah. It's great.
For comedians in the UK, because it's a very American thing, but I think for American comedians, there's never really a thought of like, once I peak in America, then I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Is that more like in the UK, if you get to a certain level, is there a thought like, well, perhaps I'll then venture out, or do some guys go, I'm stoked being number one here. I don't need to go legitimize myself anywhere else.
Yeah, that's pretty much spot on. I think like there are some comedians that like the truth is it's like in terms of like comedy, films, music and stuff like that.
Right.
Traditionally, we've always looked across to you guys as like, you know, you always think bands have always thought, I want to come over and break the States, and comedians and actors and stuff like that. That's always been a thing. But there are comedians that just, they've got no desire to come over here and try, you know, they're
right.
like, I just wanted to become a comedian and I've got to a certain level in Britain. I don't care about going over to America. You know, that is definitely true.
But not you.
Not me. No, yeah. but the thing is, I think it just depends on what you grow up watching. Do you know what I mean? Like, I grew up watching American stand-up, you know, and like I started watching Richard Pryor, and like my dad and I used to watch like Eddie Murphy, and you know, like, and you start getting in, and then I started, and so my route into stand-up was for American comics, and I started watching American comics, and then I started watching British comics, and I love British comedy, and I think it's great, but that always gave me that sort of thing of thinking I'd love to sort of come over to, yeah because I think American stand-up is amazing, and I think your very best stand-ups are so incredible that I was always going to have that desire of coming over here to try.
Who do you put on the top right now? Who of American stand-ups are you loving?
I mean, I've always loved Chappelle. I mean, I'm going to say obvious names here, but I mean,
Roseanne.
Like, yeah.
No, don't say Roseanne.
Like Bill Burr, I just think is...
We're on Bill Burr's network.
Right. I just think...
Yeah, he's great.
He's unbelievable. I mean, the thing I think about him for me is, and also it's also true of Chappelle, I think, is when you watch stand-up as a stand-up, because the best thing you can do to ruin all stand-up comedy for yourself is become a stand-up, because you see all the wheels and it stops being... funny. Like, you watch something and you go, oh, that's good, that's good, but you're not laughing, you still think it's good, but you're not like, you know, you suddenly,
you're analyzing it,
yeah. And most of the time when you're watching other stand-ups, even if you think they're brilliant, you know what's happening. Like, you can tell this is a deliberate misdirection to go, you know, I know where this is going. I still think it's excellent and I still think the idea is great, but I think Bill Burr and Dave Chappelle and people like that, and I went to see Chris Rock recently in London, but like, I think people like that, you can't see it. You can't, it just looks like it's just happening, and it's just, you know, the conceit of stand-up, which is that you're just talking and it's funny.
Right.
At the same time, are there comedians that you look at, you don't have to name names, but like, that you go, how the fuck is this person popular?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I mean, I do it as a writer or a director. Oh. I'm sure you do it as an actor. Like, yeah, this guy. It's just natural.
Miles Teller. No. I see him at the audition and I'm like, I should go home. It's not going to work out for me.
But I do think that, I think the difference is that you sort of go, the thing with comedy is it's so subjective, but it's subjective to the point that it makes you angry. It doesn't make me angry, but like, people, if they watch a comedian trying to be funny and they don't find it funny, they want that person dead. You know, that's the reaction to comedy. When people don't like comedy, they find it offensive that this person even thinks that they should be doing comedy. It's disgusting. Do you know what I mean? I can't believe you're doing it. And the truth is, it's so subjective that something that you might think is unbelievable, it just might not click for you at all. And when you start off doing comedy, you're so stuck up. Like, the arrogance, the disparity between your arrogance and your level of ability when you first start doing stand-up is incredible. Like, you go to gigs, you see somebody kill it, and you just go, yeah, I mean, it's fairly obvious subject matter. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what you've got, because you've got no idea how difficult it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so it's, and then as you carry on, and as you get more experience, you start to go, well, even if I don't find this funny or it's not for me, I respect the craft and I understand that what they're doing works. Do you know what I mean? I don't like it. It's but not for me, but I get it. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I get why that's working.
Are there obvious, because you hear with a lot of American comedians of the last 2 years and probably comedians all over the world, but they're like, some just say, I'm not going to do Trump bits because it's so ubiquitous.
And well, it's funny that you bring up Trump. Go ahead. Sorry. Continue.
No, I was just interested if like, for you, if there are certain bits, maybe for UK comedians or just all comedians, where you're just like, maybe I'm not going to touch Brexit, it's so talked about.
Yeah, that is definitely true. I think that that Brexit in particular is something that that comedians struggle to continue to talk about. The thing is, it just trundles on and on and on. And it's very, like, when it first sort of happened, there's lots of really interesting takes on it and stuff. But now there aren't as many. But, you know, but the truth is, I think that for a lot of people, well, for my attitude personally is, if you've got a different take on it, then do it. I think that, like, you know, there's this thing about there's hack topics and there's certain things you shouldn't talk about, differences between men and women, airplane food or whatever, you know, okay, the typical standard things that people, it's even hack. I think it's even hacky to say airplane food is a hacky thing, actually. I think I've like disappeared up my own arsehole of hack. But I just think if you can find a twist on it or say something interesting about it, then just do it. Do you know what I mean? I just think that it's, I mean, for me personally, one of the things that I had a struggle with is talking about race, because when people see a comedian of colour, an ethnic minority comedian, there are some people that think that immediately go, I bet this person's going to talk about race, or they're going to talk about it almost immediately. Or the thing I hate about comedians of colour is that they always talk about race or whatever. And when I first started, doing a couple of bits of TV, I'd get people like tweet me or whatever and go, oh my God, like it was a minute. And then you started talking about, we get it, you're brown, we get it. Do you know what I mean? Hmm. And for a while I stopped. I thought, shit, I don't want to talk about it because I just keep getting stick for it. And maybe it's like the wrong thing to talk about race. But then I actually realized that if you've got a different or interesting, funny take on it, then why not talk about it? Hmm. First of all, I should be able to talk about whatever I want. Even if I do it in a shit way, I shouldn't be allowing other people's expectations dictate to me what I talk about. But I do think, like, if you can come up now, if I'm talking about race, ideally it would be like a different take on it, or my personal, you know, angle on it or whatever. So I think you should just talk about whatever, but there are certain things like Brexit and stuff like that, where when somebody starts talking about Brexit, I think this is either going to be shit or the most incredible thing I've ever heard, because it has to be. If you've got a new thing to say about Brexit, you must have something magic in your locker. Genius. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
So here's what I was going to say is, your semi-Trump connection is, you were on The Apprentice, you're fired in Britain.
Yes.
Which wasn't Donald Trump.
No.
But obviously Donald Trump is the guy behind
it. It was like
his
British nemesis, Alan Sugar, yeah.
Yeah, but it was actually The Apprentice.
Yes.
Right. So then I'm just curious what the thoughts over there, and I mean, how long have you been now in LA?
Like 6, 7 months, no, longer than that, 8 months, something like that.
What's the opinion over there in the comedy world? Do you guys crack jokes about Trump? How is he looked at? I'm just curious as an outsider.
The truth is that it's sort of disbelief, really. I think it's sort of when it first was sort of being touted that he was going to stand for, you know, for candidacy and for the Republican Party, everybody just thought it was a joke and like and then thought that was going to be as far as it would go, and then nobody believed that he was going to beat Hillary Clinton. I think people,
no, nobody here either.
Yeah, I think people knew that Hillary Clinton wasn't completely infallible. Obviously she's got her flaws and, you know, people didn't think she's perfect, but they thought there was no way that Donald Trump was going to beat her. And in fact, actually, Alan Sugar, I remember I was on tour when the election happened, and he was on television, I think it was like some news network. I saw him talking about it, because he doesn't really like Donald Trump, Alan Sugar, He sort of said that he thinks it's the greatest publicity stunt he's ever put. He said, I think he wants to lose. I think that actually what he's doing is it's just a massive publicity stunt. Mm. He's doing all this stuff. That's why he's liberated to say whatever the hell he wants. He can be as populist as he likes.
And
do you know what I mean?
It worked.
Yeah, but it worked beyond everyone's expectations, according to Alan Sugar, including his. And he got elected. So in the UK, it's sort of seen with disbelief. However, what I would say is, the UK are being less smug and sanctimonious about it since we voted for Brexit. Because we voted for Brexit, you can't start going, well, that's ridiculous. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So actually,
those in glass houses.
It's sort of like, oh, it happened to you. We had the same.
we had the same thing happen over here, guys.
Yeah, good.
That's funny. Now I want to go back to one of the things that you were talking about before, which was the race thing. And I saw something in the trailer for the show, which was when you, I guess it was a casting director or whatnot, that says, you know, with your look and in front of your children, that you could play terrorists.
Like, yes,
that's what. That,
yeah.
A, it was in front of your children, which I thought was very funny.
Well, it's good for them to know that their dad has got options. Sure. Do you know what I mean? So I think there's a positive thing.
It's called job security.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah, look, kids, versatile.
What was that like? How do you explain that? And I'm sure that's a reality. So do you act, and you want to do some acting out here?
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess I do. I mean, I've done acting, and it's something I was thinking about doing. I mean, the truth is, when I went to get the headshots, it was mainly because I've been told that you're supposed to have headshots to show your versatility, or show, you know what I mean? It makes you more of a viable kind of
the goofy headshot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, smolder. Yeah,
the terrorist headshot, apparently.
Yes, terrorist headshot. I don't know if you guys would, but anyway,
we do the Jewish ones. Yeah, just kind of.
Yeah, I've heard that
face. Yeah.
The reality is, when she said that, I just hope my kids wouldn't ask me about it. Is what happened in that situation? Huh. But I don't know. Like, No, they didn't ask me. But race has come up in conversations with my children because my kids can see that my wife is white and I'm not, and so. They ask, the way they see it is that my wife's the outsider because they consider us all brown, so we're all in one camp, and then my wife is like this oppressor.
Your poor fucking wife.
I know, man. Jeez.
Oh my God, I'm going to send her a gift basket.
Yeah, no, she needs it. but she and I were both worried about it. Not worried about it, I'm exaggerating slightly.
But it's a thought.
It's a thought, exactly. It's a thought, and you sort of go, at some point, because I know from a very young age, I got racism at school, and it wasn't even somebody that knew what they were saying. They'd heard a word and they used it against me or whatever. So we're conscious of the fact that our kids are probably going to get it, and they have done. So you do think about how you're going to address that with your kids. The idea of stereotyping, you know, terrorist stereotype or something, is not something I've broached with them yet, to be honest.
Because honestly, when I saw that on the clip, I was like, that's the first thing that went through my mind is because A, it's a reality in this Hollywood and stuff that we live in, so you got to explain that part of it.
Yeah.
It was also a funny moment.
I know.
So it's one of those moments where, like with your wife, is it good because it's funny? I have to explain.
It's the silver lining of the ridiculous,
Yeah, but I think, do either of you have children?
No, not that I know of. We're both wanting to.
Right.
Eventually.
Okay, cool.
Not with each other.
No.
Right.
No.
Hey.
I'll give you both 2 points because I thought that's quite a nice little riff there.
Okay, nice.
Which is actually pointless, isn't it? Because you're competing against each other. So why did I bother doing that? Yeah.
What are we thinking? God.
I think that if when questions like that do come up, because they do ask questions, like, and had they asked me about that terrorist thing, I always think the best policy is just sort of honesty and explaining the situation as best you can to their level. Do you know what I mean? Because my oldest son is mature for his age, but he's still 8. So there's a lot to sort of unpack. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of footage to show him. This is what a terrorist is. This is what they do. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's all of that to sort of plow through.
Yeah.
That's an afternoon. Do you know what I mean?
Like, planning.
Yeah.
Well, wow. It's like this, me.
These are infidels. Your mom is one. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of that kind of stuff.
It's like when I grew up, I've never met my dad. And so up until a certain age, my dad was just this great guy, my mom told me, who just didn't want to hang out.
Right.
And then around 15 or 16, she was
the
like,
reality.
A little more of a piece of shit. I'm like, message received.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because there was the controversy or whatever with the Apu character from The Simpsons, which was, you know, a big thing, and they did the documentary about it, and people commented on that.
What I don't know from myself, I know Harry a little bit, and I think he's great, and
brilliant.
I think the documentary is great. What I didn't know was if that was a controversial thing here before Harry sort of... Was that something that people had talked about before that?
Not really.
Because
he's obsessed. He's been watching it.
I'm a Simpsons,
Right.
Huge Simpsons person.
Right. So I...
Maybe not vocalized, at least, you know?
But the thing is that what I didn't... It was a difficult one, because like in Britain, it's just... Are Britain's relationship with people from that part of the world, or, you know, immigrants from South Asia, is very different from over here.
Right.
And they're much not, it's not perfect, the amount of representation by people, you know, of Asian, South Asian descent in Britain. But I would say it's more than here, probably. You know, like certainly right. when I watch films from America and shows from America, until relatively recently, there's been a very narrow band of what type of character a person from that part of the world is going to be. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So I think that in Britain, it was less of, having a character like Apu is less of an issue for British audiences to see than maybe for American audiences. Because I get it. If that's the only thing, one of the only things that you see of people from that part, then I do sort of understand it. But with The Simpsons, I mean, you know better than I mean, I'm a fan of The Simpsons, but it sounds like you're an obsessive.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that they are disrespectful to every, almost every...
Yeah, it's equally...
Yeah.
Equally so, offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, what did you think? I mean, did you watch it and then suddenly the scales fell from your eyes and thought, shit, I hate Apu now?
No, not completely, but right. it was like but, kind of one of those, oh.
But it's yeah. sort of, you know? It's been the experience of most white men in this country over the last few years, which
true.
Is being enlightened to the things that we just, I remember.
They call it woke.
Yes, indeed woke.
Yeah.
Like even being married to my wife and not understanding that she could go out in the afternoon where she grew up, which was like a rich beach town, high end, beautiful, that she could walk around at 2 in the afternoon and feel unsafe because she'd get a unwanted catcall or an overture from someone or a weird glare that to me, like that's never been part of my understanding. But
yeah.
until I was with her, I had no idea that was her experience.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that I think is, it's part of the thing that I think is with all of these sort of issues and, you know, bringing it back to sort of Harry's documentary, what I think is so interesting about that, about his decision to make that, because I thought it was great. And I thought he raised some really great points, is that, if it's true that nobody was saying that before, it then makes that much braver to come out and say that, because you risk, you run, first of all, you're sort of talking about The Simpsons, which is like an institution.
A juggernaut, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, you run the risk of being told that you're making a big deal out of nothing, because nobody, I didn't know of anybody that talked about having a problem with Apu before right. Harry did yeah. that, right?
Right.
So then you, like, so for him, that's quite, I just think it's a brave thing for,
yeah,
like, for him
sure.
to go, no, I've got a problem with it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make a program about the fact that I've got a problem with this thing that's in this show that everybody loves.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean? I thought it was great for him to bring it
and
up.
Can we just say that it is easier to be a whistleblower when you're worth $100 million?
Well,
so, like, shit. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't making 48 grand a year being like, I'm going to blow this shit up. Yeah. Forget it.
That's true. He had a little bit of a nest egg to fall back on.
Yeah, he's doing just fine.
Yeah.
But good on you.
I know. Do you know what? Fuck him, man.
Yeah, fuck him.
I don't think can we scratch everything I just said? It's cowardly.
You are of Sri Lankan descent,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Where did you grow up, in London, or did you grow up?
Yes, I was born in Crawley, actually, which is south of.
Oh
London.
Yeah, I saw that you were a math teacher at Hazelwich School in
God,
Crawley.
You've done research. Oh my!
I
God,
have.
Come
look
on.
At this.
Well, you I just love because that sounded
lace
like
him up. Points, lace him up.
That sounded very like Harry Potter to me. The
right,
Hazelwich
yeah.
School in Crawley.
Yes.
So okay, so you grew up in Crawley.
Yes, and
then you were a math teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I did a number of jobs, and then I became a math teacher. And then while I was teaching, I just started doing stand-up as like a hobby. So I just started doing gigs in the evening and stuff like that. I mean, gradually that started to take off, and then I started to think, oh, I don't want to do the math teaching anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Do you have some fun math teacher stories?
What grades?
Yeah, what grades?
So it was like 11 to 18 year olds.
Oh.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah, yeah.
And who are the biggest shitheads? Like, who? What age do they
so
really get
14,
annoying?
I would say 13 to 14 is the age where you transition into what you're going to be going forward,
right?
And that is a stage at which the kids are the most difficult. I would say that is the year group at which you go. Whenever you've got one of those classes, you think, I don't know how this is going to go. Like
right.
I'm just really going to roll the dice on this one,
right?
So yeah, those are probably the biggest shitheads. I would say that generally speaking, girls are more difficult to teach. They're not more difficult to teach. Generally speaking, girls are more easier to teach than boys.
Right.
But when a female student takes a dislike to you, or doesn't want to do it, you're fucked. You might as well go, you can go somewhere, like you can spend an hour every week somewhere else.
Right.
Because you're never going to get that. Like, because with like boys, they tend to just be like immature dicks.
Right.
And then you go, can you not do that? And you have to do a little bit of, and then they go, oh, I'll just fucking go. Whereas girls, there is some deep-seated reason.
Right.
Like they disagree with one of your fundamental teaching techniques.
Right.
And so you're, do you know what I mean? They're not going to suddenly get on side. Like, you know, you go, can you just step in line? Can you be a better practitioner? How about that?
Oh, my
God.
Like,
do you know what I mean? Like, so you can't.
My friend taught eighth grade, you know, was an eighth grade teacher, and he had one of the most brilliant takes on something where he's like, you know, a 13-year-old boy was just being a shithead and yelled something out of class and was sort of like, you know, giggling with his friends. And I said, no, Daniel, what you just said wasn't funny. And if you look around, no girls are laughing. And if none of the girls are laughing, it
just
means
call it out.
And he's like, no, my buddies are laughing. He's like, I know, but they're just supporting you. But like, trust me, that's not funny. And you're better than that. Hmm. And it served him well.
Yeah.
That what you just did there is like, that's one of the things that you get, not the girls thing,
right?
But that thing where you go, what you just said is not funny and what you're doing is not good. That was one of like the things that when I got told about doing that, it changed classroom management thing. Because what you do is you separate the behavior from the kid, right? So if you say to a kid, you're messing up my lesson, you're ridiculous, you're noisy, you're loud, you can't be in here, if you say all of that, that kid is more likely to take it personally. Is going to go, I'm not going to do this. You don't like me.
Right.
And if a kid thinks you don't like him, it's over, right? Mm. Whereas if you go, your behavior is causing a problem, your talking is too, like you separate them from their behavior.
Right.
Right.
Immediately you'll notice a difference in the way that they respond to like what you're saying. It's like magic.
Right.
Like, because if a class believes that you like them and you fundamentally want the best for them, they will accept any telling off or any like strictness from you because they think that you're doing it. They believe that you're doing it for their own. You know when you see teachers that hate kids? I mean, you must have seen this when you were at school.
Oh, fuck yeah.
They always have a torrid time because the kids can smell it. They're like raptors. They know. Do you know what I mean? Like, but you don't like them. You don't give a shit. Not that you don't give a shit. You've lost it. You've lost your love for it. You don't give a shit. And that's when people have problems. You know what I mean?
Do you hear from any of the kids that you taught and now that you're a big success and they're like, oh,
but all these kids claiming that they're in my classes. Bullshit. Do you know what I mean? They can't all have been students in my class. You know? I do get kids getting in touch, but like when I first started, like I was doing like the college, like university circuit, and there'd always be like kids that I used to teach that were at that place, and like sometimes I'd just get like a positive bit of encouragement before I'd even said anything. Like I'd like walk up to the mic and then somebody go, go on, Ranganathan, do you know what I mean? Like before it even started.
It's actually Ragnathan.
I should have corrected him. Yeah.
There you go.
I always wonder this, before you started doing comedy and you're teaching these kids, and I imagine there was something in your soul where you knew that you wanted to be an artist and perform. Were there moments in teaching these kids where you were like, fuck, like my life's pretty good, but like I wish I was doing something more than this? Did you have that?
A little, but well, the truth is I didn't want to give up. I wasn't being pushed away from teaching because I like teaching a lot. And actually it's like a very rewarding job when it's going well, like when you're on top of it. I mean, I don't know I don't know enough about what education is like in this country, but in the UK, teachers are very overworked and they keep changing the requirements and teachers' workload keeps increasing and increasing. So it's actually, when you're outside of the classroom, that job is very, very stressful. In the classroom, it's fun because it's what you started becoming a teacher for, right? So I wasn't like dreading getting annoyed every single day. But I absolutely loved doing stand-up, and still do. Like, so I was going off and doing those gigs and feeling like exhilarated by doing something that I really liked. And it wasn't like I was then going into work thinking, oh, this is shit. But like, but I was thinking, oh, I'm really loving doing the comedy. But then what happened was I started getting more and more gigs, and then I started being shit at both things because I was teaching, and then I was going home, getting changed, and then going straight to a gig, and I was exhausted, and I was like preparing lessons on the way to the classroom. You're supposed to, when I first started doing teaching, I was so conscientious. Jimmy and I'd spend the weeks before planning lessons going, and then if it goes this way, I mean, who knows which direction the lesson will go into? Jimmy, I'll give them three options and we'll just see where the curiosity takes
choose
us.
Choose your own adventure. Yeah.
By the time I was doing stand-up, I was like, page 49, whatever fucking happens.
Multiple
choice.
We
are doing this, right? I don't give a shit if we did it yesterday. You're as doing it again.
As a teacher, like, of 18-year-old, teenager, 17, 18-year-olds, this is just a thought that popped in my head that I'm curious about. Not that it would be a concern that you would find any of them attractive or whatnot, but is there a concern as a teacher that people would view that, or students would think that, or that there was something like that? I would imagine that's something you have to be a little conscientious of.
Yes, you do. You just have to cover your tracks. Do you know what I mean? No, there's you just have to be very, very careful.
I like that line.
Do you know what I mean? Yes.
Makes all the sense in the world,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah, of course. I'm not an idiot.
Yeah, come on.
No, the truth is that there are loads of things that you have to be mindful of. For example, this sounds obvious, but they would tell you never, ever touch a kid. And what I mean by that is even putting a hand on their back to say, well, you just do not do that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you do not ever do that. And then if you keep a kid behind to talk to them after class, you can never be between them and the door, ever.
Wow.
Because that is potentially they feel like they can't leave.
Trigger.
Yeah, exactly. They can't. They feel like you're blocking their exit from the room, and that can be.
If
you want to block, you put a little piece of paper over the window, and then you just fucking go to
do
town.
What you gotta do.
But what I'm saying is for the public arena.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? You can never. Yeah. So there's all those sorts of things. Yeah. You know what I mean, and then like when I was as I was teaching, social media started to become like a bigger thing, and schools didn't know what the fuck to do because like students were adding teachers as friends on Facebook and then and all of this shit, and like so I was teaching when it started to schools just didn't know what the rules should be about that sort of thing, and now it's I think they've sorted it out. Do you know what I mean? But there was a period where like there was when I was teaching, one of the other teachers had a birthday party and it was like fancy dress, like superheroes. And there was a maths teacher who dressed up as Catwoman, and that photo got circulated all over the school.
Jesus.
Yeah, because that got shared on Facebook, and then one of the teachers was friends with one of the students on Facebook, and then she was known as Catwoman for the rest of. And she's not teaching anymore. It ended her career.
Oh,
it's sad, but you know, it's worth
it for
the
anecdote. Are we talking Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman, Halle Berry?
No, she looked very much like a maths teacher that. Oh, okay, gotcha. Thrown on a Catwoman costume.
Message
there's
received.
No, there, she was not. There was no. You,
that's great.
I recently saw the basketball scene from Halle Berry's Catwoman.
It went viral.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I think I saw it in the movie, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, you need to watch it again, man. It might be the worst thing that's ever.
Properly it's just terrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. It's the worst.
Seems to go and coincide with the whole movie.
This is spectacular.
All right, I'll check that out. Yeah. All right, we got to get you out of here. So I want to ask two more questions.
Sure.
Number one is, this is actually a question from one of our fans.
Right.
Who is the most famous person to have grabbed your genitals?
Wow.
Who is the most famous person?
I know, it's a weird question.
Grabbed my genitals. I guess who is more famous? Idris Elba or. No, I'm joking.
I like him.
I'd let that happen. Who's the most famous person? I guess it would be my Uncle Rags.
And what was the reason?
It was, I was young.
Oh.
And he, no, I'm joking. It was just for a joke. But he's like I think he'd like to hear. I mean, he has. He's touched my dick in a playful kind of.
Yeah.
You know, like, ah, mate.
Like in an uncle way.
In an uncle. In an uncle. Like, in an uncle, this never happened.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was a. I was young. It was dark. Yeah. It was like, you know, this happens to everyone. Everyone does this.
Keep this between us, and if you're lucky, it'll happen again.
Yeah.
Right.
And you don't bruise easily. You know that? You guys know what I'm talking about.
Right.
No, he just did it for a joke.
That's funny.
So,
all right. My last question is, you've been doing a lot of press for this, for Just Another Immigrant. What's the one question nobody has asked you, or something nobody's asked you that you wish was asked in the whole thing?
Oh, shit, man.
I'm just curious. Right? I think that, like, when I do interview, like, when people have, whatever, in the past, I'm like, yeah. Oh, I just want them to ask about this or that. Or
oh, right.
Is there anything that, if not, that's okay.
I tell you what I would like to be asked, actually. What I think about the new 7-track Kanye albums.
Oh,
what do you think of that new 7-track?
Wait, they didn't
Kanye?
Ask you this at TMZ?
No.
Oh, well, you know, TMZ that, is where it all went down. Of course, and whatever.
Yeah,
okay.
That
yeah,
was,
I would love to hear.
First of all, are you guys Kanye fans?
Not especially. Definitely not after that.
After
his breakdown on TMZ.
Right.
I'm a massive fan.
You're a massive
but
fan.
All I want to know is, where are the bangers? Where are the hits? Give me the hits. I don't care what you think about the world or culture or life. Just give me the hits.
They haven't been
around for a while.
No, it's
all right. What do you think about? So, what do you think about?
Thank
the
you.
Album?
Oh, finally, thank you. I get a chance.
And yes. Tie in. What do you think about him and his antics?
Okay, so what I think about him and his antics. I'm a massive Kanye fan, or at least
really?
I was a massive Kanye fan. And I still am, but I think he's going through... I actually think that he's going through, like, some serious issues and needs help.
True. Mental break.
True.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that what he said was on TMZ was unfortunate. And there's lots of people in the UK, particularly from the black community, that have decided that they will no longer engage with anything he does as a result of what he said. And I totally understand that.
What do you mean in the UK... Like you, as opposed to here, you there's something specific about the UK that
no, it's just that I just know a lot of UK hip hop fans,
yeah,
and they've sort of said to me, I will never listen to anything he does ever
yeah.
again, like
right.
that,
yeah.
that's until something happens, like he apologizes or it's cleared up why he's been behaving like this,
yeah,
right.
I am never gonna, never gonna listen to anything he says again. Do you know? Can I tell you something? I suggested this question, and as I'm talking about it, I'm thinking, shit, this is a complicated issue. I wish I'd never.
Well, you know what?
Up.
Why don't you just tell me what you think of the
okay,
songs?
Fine. So
you're still a fan, though?
Yeah. Well, musically, I think he's good.
Okay.
I think that the Pusha T album,
killer.
Yes,
it's fucking
it
great.
Is great. It's the so Pusha good. T album is great. Yeah. I think I prefer the Pusha T album probably to Ye. I've got. I'm not as keen on Ye. I just 7 tracks, man.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
7 songs.
I agree.
It's rough.
It is rough. Right?
I even got upset. There's 1 track, number 5,
yeah.
with that hook. Make no mistake, girl. I know. I sing it just as it.
I'm
going to
give
played.
You 10 points. Because I just thought you absolutely nailed that.
That wow. one, thank you.
I
don't forget who asked you the question in the first place.
Oh, that's true.
So,
yeah, that's true. Oh.
It sounds like old Kanye, like Graduation 2008,
yeah,
everything
yeah, yeah.
was perfect. And then it literally, he lets it play out for 44 seconds and cuts it and goes that's on it. Some weird rant. And I'm like, you couldn't give us one?
Mm.
Just one full song?
I just think, do you know what I think about that? Is I think that... If you do a 22-track album, then you're allowed to have a track where you just
right.
shit, or,
right.
or you talk, or you like do whatever. If it's 7 tracks, it just all has to be fire. Like there's yeah, do you know what I mean? It all has to be like straight, just rapping like full tilt, right?
Right.
And that's what I just think. I get the idea of 7 tracks because you sort of go, that's lean and blah blah blah, but then it all has to be. Unbelievable. You have to go, these are, I made 1,000 or like, I don't know, I made 100 songs and these are the best 7.
Mm, right.
So that has to be, that raises the pressure on each of those songs. Have you heard the Cudi album? Like the
not yet.
Right. I've heard a little bit of it. I think you're going to like it. What
really?
I've heard, yeah, I think it's,
who?
I think it's.
Kid Cudi? No?
I know Bette Midler. I'm a big Bette Midler fan.
Yeah,
the
well,
biggest.
Bette Midler,
She does a feature.
Yeah. She can spit. Yeah. So she, because the thing I didn't realize about Bette Midler is she can do that multi-syllabic flow.
Oh,
do,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Incredible. And it's sort only of like a
her,
mumble rap.
It's only her and Logic that are really bringing it like that. Oh, right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I need to get this album.
Her cadence at 74. Oh, my God, dude.
And she can ride a dancehall rhythm as well. Oh, that's what's amazing about her.
Oh, good. Okay, so where do we stand gradually? Because we're going to have one little kind of push to put one of us over the top, but where do we stand generally in the points?
Well, Josh's
he's so just shot ahead.
He was getting shat on by you. Mm. But he then did that little Kanye hook. Mm-hmm. And I had to smash out some points for that, so he is currently 1 point ahead of you on 15 to 14.
Okay. Wow. So we can do one more thing to maybe put one of us over the top. I was thinking of two different things. One, you can give us a math problem. Sure. And whichever one of us solves it quicker wins.
Okay.
This
sounds like podcast gold.
Or two, I was thinking, because I kind of want to hear if you can do an American accent.
Okay.
If Josh and I do our best British accent.
Ooh. Okay, fine.
Which one do you want?
I think we should do the accent.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, mainly because I can't be asked to do a maths problem. But yeah, let's.
But before that, do you do an American accent?
I've tried, but okay. I'll tell you a story.
If we're going to do our British, I want to hear
your American. I'll tell you a story to give you before I do this American accent.
Yeah.
So I got an audition for The Martian. You know that movie?
Yeah, sure.
Right. So
It would have been completely different if it was you instead of Matt Damon.
Yes.
I think that would have been a completely different film.
Yeah, it would have been. It would have been
I want to see
much,
that version.
Much worse. But I was supposed to play a brown man at a terminal. Like, do you know what I mean? Like going, you know, this is supposed to be in Sector 6 or whatever.
But not a terrorist. So
not a terrorist.
There you
go. No, like a science guy.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? So I was supposed to be playing that. So I got sent the stuff and so I read the script. I was very excited. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, this is quite cool. I had no expectations going into it. The only thing I wasn't sure, it didn't say in the script whether accent. I had to have an American accent or was just going to play it as a British accent. Right? Yeah. So I go to this place in London where they're doing the audition. It's downstairs, this little thing. I go into a room where there are like four other brown guys.
Right.
And I sort of chat to them and pretend I'm feeling really casual, try and psych them out a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mind games.
Intimate to them that I've already been given the nod.
Right.
That is probably, I probably got it in the bag. Do you know what I mean? Like, all that kind of shit. Just to, you know. Anyway, they go in and leave. And then it's my turn. I go in and I say to the casting agent, she's very nice. I said to her, am I supposed to do this in an American accent or British? And she said, why don't we do both and see what Ridley prefers? Right? Mm. Now, I got very excited when I heard that saying, like, see what Ridley prefers. Yeah. Holy shit. I'm in an audition for The Martian. Like, yeah. I'm fucking getting a little, twitch in my balls. Like, you know, I'm getting very excited.
Yeah.
So I start doing the American accent. I'll do it American first and then do it British afterwards.
Yeah.
I think do the difficult one first.
Yeah.
Get that out of the way. So I start doing the American accent and then she starts laughing.
Oh, my greatest
fear. So she's behind she's got the camera like running at me. She starts laughing. And then I go, oh, I said, I didn't really do that well. Should I try it again? And she goes, sure. So I do it again and she starts laughing again. And she's sort of borderline uncontrollable. So I stop and then I go, I don't think it's worth doing the British one. Do you know what I mean? So that's
your American
accent.
But in fairness to me, doing an American accent is one thing. Doing an American accent and talking about Alpha Centauri 712.
Impossible.
Mm. Yeah.
Completely.
Thank you.
So you didn't get the part.
Huh?
You
no, I did get it. That's it. I was in it.
Did you? No.
No.
I'm still waiting.
Just give me a little.
Okay. Hey. What the hell is going on here?
Yeah,
thanks.
I like
okay.
that.
Thanks.
All right, that. Josh, you and I would assume, well, you're an actor, so I'm sure you have like your go-to.
Ish.
Okay, I will do mine first. I am you teaching the Hazel Witch School in Crawley.
Holy shit, he's got like a scenario.
All right.
Yeah. Hello, students. Today we're going to learn about the... No, it's Australian. Today we're going to learn about...
You're fucking wait for me!
Quadratic equations.
Why you talk so funny, asshole?
Don't mind the paper on the door, on the windows, covering it. We're going to have a little extra after-school special.
Oh, my God.
There you go.
Wow, that was great. All right. That was great.
Wow, wow.
Thank you. Wow, that was really good, man.
Okay, Josh?
I don't... Man.
You're playing me as like a pedo. I just want to clarify. That's what that detail was.
Well, I was actually trying to bring it full circle, you know.
I like that.
Comedy is... Yeah. Okay.
God, that's so, it's so much pressure. Now I feel like I need a scenario.
Thank you.
Okay, you are a student. A piece of paper has just been put over the window.
Right.
And the teacher is a... No, I'm joking. I don't know. What scenario...
Well, let's see something we talked about.
I'll say, so I'll be a young comedian up to you at the club and being like, oi.
Good. Jewish?
Oi.
Jewish.
I'm a really big fan, mate.
That's good.
I've been watching you for like crazy ages, man. Fuck, man. Meghan Markle, she's a good looking bird, huh, mate?
Right,
come on, bro.
Oh, wait a second. All right. End scene.
End scene. I don't want to give
end
away.
Scene. Yeah. So now I need you to pick a winner.
Okay.
And, you know, neither of us will have our feelings hurt, but there has to be a winner.
Okay, fine. Matt, I thought what you did was great.
Okay.
I like the way you threw details in from what the stories that I told.
Thank you.
And Josh didn't do any of that. He sort of came up with his own scenario.
Yes, that's true.
But on the other hand, Josh was much better than you. like much, much better than you at doing the actual accent.
Fuck, mate.
And thank you for validating my decision.
So what are you saying?
So what I'm saying is I'm handing the win to you.
Congratulations, right. Josh.
Thank you. Honored.
Well deserved. Well, everybody, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you had a good time.
I had a great time. Thanks, great.
Man. I know you're doing a lot of press, so I hope this was a different type of excitement for you.
This is easily the best. Run that I've ever done.
Fantastic.
Wow.
So everybody must watch Just Another Immigrant on Showtime.
Hell yeah.
I see it's on like all the time. It's like there's like reruns on all the time. So you can pretty much catch it whenever.
Listen, record it, watch it back. This, it works on so many levels. And by so many, I mean like two.
So watch it for both levels.
Yeah. I'm sold.
I'm sold too. Thank you very much. Josh, thank you for filling in today.
Thank you.
Audience, thank you for putting up with my horrible English accent, apparently. We'll talk to you next time. Bye.